You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee, and Photos by DOEE. Today, we're going to be discussing some flash gear that is worth purchasing, some news updates on various different topics, and some personal updates, which we will get into first right now. So first off, as you know, you could probably see from my previous episode, Nat just really enjoying doing the texture overlays. I haven't shot that much besides that Macro Monday shot the previous week. I don't think I can do Macro Monday this week, mainly because, yeah, recording this and just been out a lot and I'm just really, really tired. So yeah, just need my rest, and always good to take the rest if you need it rather than just forcing yourself to do something you won't give 100% in. I feel like, you know, when you know you have a break over the holiday period, like end of year period, and you know it's coming up, you just get more tired and it's like your mind just sort of convinces you that you're extra tired and you need that rest even more. So just building up to that, become more and more tired, just, oh my God, I need that break sort of thing. But, you know, we're a few weeks away from that now. I got quite a bit of, not the full Christmas period off, sadly. I still have to work 2 days, the 29th and the 30th, but I still got a decent break, so it's better than nothing, you know? Otherwise, you know, now that I've sold, I think I mentioned, all my Canon EF lenses, I don't have any EF gear and I do not intend to buy any EF gear going forward. So that means I can finally sell my EF to RF adapter as well as my EFM to EF adapter. So really need to get around to selling those. By the time I sell them, they probably won't even make them anymore because it's, you know, it's just a simple thing. Take a few photos, put it online, that's it. But I still haven't got around to doing it yet. I will get there though. One exciting thing is I actually got the Samsung Tab S7 FE, which is a really, really nice tablet. I'd always used an iPad just to watch shows and that on, you know, YouTube, that kind of stuff. But it's an iPad Mini 4. It's really old. It's about 6 years old. So even if I charge it to 100%, it'll always just die instantly almost when I take it off charge. It's pretty much the battery's gone. It's just old as hell, you know. I think it's around $150 to get it, the battery replaced, which I honestly could have done, but I don't know how long the other components would last considering its age, so I decided just to get a new tablet. The Samsung, you know, got on sale for around just over $700 from staff discounts for a 128 gig model. The good thing about the Samsungs is they obviously take micro SD cards, so easily expand it up for, you know, $30-$40. You can add extra 128 gigs. It is really nice. There's some things I had to get used to it, like in terms of using Adblock on the browsers. You know, that's a bit different, the approach you have to take for certain things like YouTube, but otherwise it works just as well if you know what to do and what sort of workarounds there are. Originally, I had wanted a Surface Pro, mainly because it runs full Windows OS, so that way you could just back up everything really easy to your storage or the iCloud, that kind of stuff, when you travel. I probably will take this with me when I travel, mainly because I realize now I could just simply copy everything if I can get like a USB SD card reader, you know, and plug it in today, get an adapter, plug it in and use it that way. That would be really good. Then I could literally import them all onto my OneDrive from the tablet, or, you know, save them even to the tablet's internal storage if I have enough space, depending on how many photos I take and what size micro SD I have in there. Because I've got a 128 gig one, but, you know, maybe later on I'll get a bigger one. One thing I'm excited for is to go out and take photos of the Christmas decorations. So every year, you know, I always tell myself I'm going to do that, and I'm always excited to go out and do that. But, you know, previously last year, obviously because of COVID, I don't know, they did put it up, but it just didn't have the same feeling. I'm hoping this year, because everything's really back to normal here in Sydney anyway, it feels more like it. The streets are really busy again. People are out everywhere. It's like crowded. So I'm hoping it's going to have that same feeling as when we first moved here and we went out to look around the Christmas lights. There's just people in the streets celebrating, having fun. It was a really good environment. I hope to actually be able to see that, maybe do some street shots and capture that again, if I'm lucky anyway. We'll see how we go. A few more weeks, I plan to do that, you know, leading up to Christmas, maybe the day before, 23rd, 24th, that kind of stuff. Go out, look around, walk around, just enjoy myself and enjoy the holiday period. One disappointing thing is sunset here is now after 8 p.m. So it's something like 7:57, 8, that kind of stuff is when sunset is, you know, and then obviously you got to wait. Blue hour will be even later, like 8:39 p.m. So which means I will not be shooting cityscapes anymore. If I do, it would be like a middle of the day, really long exposure, done as a black and white kind of thing. It would never be a nice sunset light blue hour one until what, like May, April, once we get dark earlier again. In saying that, we don't actually see that. I don't think I've even seen a sunset maybe once, twice max in the past few, 2-3 weeks, mainly because of how cloudy and rainy it is. Once again, not complaining. I love this weather, but Yeah, it's like, it doesn't really make a difference. It's dark, the light's the same pretty much the whole day. You don't even notice it, so yeah. And I have updated my Canon EOS R6, but I haven't really tested in detail yet, just played around with it around the house. So because of that, I couldn't really see any difference yet. But when I do get the chance, probably go off the 85, do some street shots, so that way I got something to add to the review, more people-based, because, you know, 85mm is quite a people-based lens. So I feel like I need more people-based photos for that. Just the same with 50, because I don't shoot people much anymore. It's probably the least thing I shoot. That's why it's always tough. But we'll see how we go. That would be it for my personal update. So now we're on to the news. So the first news story is the Venus Optics 85mm f5.6 APO 2x macro has been announced. And it's funny because Petapixel just ran a story the previous week or so about how they want smaller, slower macro lenses, you know, lighter lenses, and now here we have this. So this is what Venus Optic claims to be the smallest 2x macro for any full frame camera out there. It's available in Canon RF, Nikon Z, Sony E mount, and Leica M mount, so pretty much all mirrorless, sorry DSLR users, and sorry Fuji as well. I just realized, obviously, because it's a full frame lens, but who knows, they could still probably do it for Fuji if they wanted to. As I mentioned, this was specifically designed for mirrorless cameras, weighs 259 grams, and is 3.18 inches long by 2.08 inches wide. So not a very big lens, quite small, which we do expect for an f5.6 lens. The APO design allows the lens to produce photos of minimal chromatic aberration. Venus Optics says the lens can focus from infinity to 2x magnification and features a minimum focusing distance of 6.31 inches or 16 centimeters. It's constructed of 13 elements in 9 groups, 3 of which are extra low dispersion elements, which Venus Optics say were added to eliminate color fringing in both focus and out of focus areas. It has 7 bladed aperture, a filter thread of 46mm, internal focusing, and $499. Now, I know a lot of people, including the person who originally wrote the article, want smaller, lighter macro lenses, and that's why they've made this. And when you're shooting at pure macro, 5.6 isn't that bad. It's actually pretty good because, you know, you need to stop down further at such close distances. The focus distancing, like the depth of field, is absolutely tiny, so f5.6 isn't the hindrance there. I think the main reason most companies make macro lenses as being a lot bigger than they are because they intend them to be used more than just macro lenses. They are very multi-purpose. Like if you buy, say, a Canon RF 100mm f2.8 or Sony 90mm macro, Sigma 105, I think Nikon's is 105mm macro as well. But if you buy any of those, you can literally, at 2.8, you can use them for portraits as well. You can use it for landscapes. They work for a lot more stuff rather than just macro. So I reckon that's why they add them the fast aperture, so that you got something in that range. If you don't want to own an 80, you very rarely casually do portraits, you don't want to own an 85mm. And this one, you know, like a macro, 100mm macro, you could just own the one and do all your portraits in that with it because of that f2.8 aperture. But either way, the product images look quite nice. I wouldn't say it's maybe not as sharp as, say, something like a Canon RF, but it's going for two different sort of areas. This one is much more budget orientated, obviously, based, you know, brand and price, but it is very nice. The images I see look pretty good. As you know, I've been getting more into my macro stuff, so in theory, this is something I could buy, but I'm pretty much, my heart is now set on that Sigma 105mm f2.8. So once that Sigma 105 2.8 macro and the 85mm f1.4 DNR come to Canon RF, I'm going to say goodbye to my 85mm f2 and I'm going to swap to those two. So something like this, you know, manual focus, Venus Optics, I don't see myself buying, even if it, you know, produces. It's not about the images, it's just, yeah, everything. I rather the adaptability of everything, so yeah. Next up, Zhongyi Optics Metacon Speedmaster 90mm f1.5 lens has been announced. Now, this one is a manual focus portrait lens for full frame Leica M, Canon RF, Sony FE, and Nikon Z mounts. The Leica M mount version can autofocus with third-party adapters such as the ones from TechArt or Megadap. The Leica M mount version can autofocus, yeah, as I mentioned, pretty much just wrote that twice, I don't know why. This lens is constructed of 9 elements in 6 groups, 2 of which are extra low dispersion elements and 2 more are low dispersion high refraction elements. This lens is classified as aprochromatic APO, and as such, the company claims that bright to dark transitions in the photo, especially highlights, are reproduced almost completely free of color artifacting. It'll be $599 for the Canon RF, Nikon Z, and Sony E mounts, whereas $649 for the Leica M mount. images are quite nice and the rendering does look pretty decent for the price. When you look at these lenses, you don't see them having the same sort of sharpness to rendering as something like Sony or Sigma or Canon, that kind of stuff. They do have a different look to them. They're much more on a, I wouldn't say soft, they don't look soft, but the rendering is soft. It's much more nice, more pleasant, that sort of thing. But yeah, I was going to say that sort of stuff. Sounds too similar to soft, but yeah. An interesting lens for someone who loves manual focus lenses. You know, with mirrorless, they're fine. Since you have focus peaking, doesn't really make too much of a difference. But either way, check it out. Check out if you like the images. If you're looking for something like this, something fairly fast, you know, f1.5 at 90mm is pretty damn decent. Practically at 85-1.4, just that little bit longer. Tiny, not even one third of a stop slower. So definitely worth looking at if you're into manual lenses and you want something cheap with a fast aperture. The next story, and probably the biggest of sorts, depending on if you use it or not, Twitter has banned sharing photos of people without their express consent. So Twitter has published an update to its private information policy that specifically bans the publication of photos and videos, so media, of private individuals without the permission of those depicted. Whenever I hear depicted, I think of Law and Order, but yeah. In a blog post, Twitter says that because of ongoing concerns about the misuse of media and information that is not available anywhere online as a tool to harass, intimidate, and reveal the identity of these individuals, the company is making a change to its policy that bans the publication of photos and videos on its platform if those depicted have not provided express consent. Sharing, this is a quote now, sharing personal media such as images or videos can potentially violate a person's privacy and may lead to emotional or physical harm. The misuse of private media can affect everyone, but can have a disproportionate effect on women, activists, dissidents, and members of minority communities, the company says. When we receive a report that a tweet contains unauthorized private media, we will now take action in line with our range of enforcement options. So Petapixel write, the new rule appears to have been put in place to help prevent doxing, which is an act of searching and publishing private or identifying information about a particular individual on the internet with malicious intent. Which, to be honest, that previous one that I read the quote from Twitter, it does certainly sound like that. It doesn't sound like they're just banning it for the sake of banning it. They're more looking at, you know, someone was at a protest, protesting what they believe in, and they get fired or something or harassed because of that. You know, let's say a legal protest anyway. You know, they're protesting for equal rights, and then they get harassed because of that. You know, this is what protects them, that kind of stuff, having their face shared. I'm sure, you know, it'll cover a lot more other stuff, not always that positive, but it does sound like that. Enforcement is the biggest concern with this issue, and as David Hobby writes, who, you know, the Strobus, while it would be pretty much impossible to enforce the rule across the platform, it would be incredibly easy to selectively enforce. Technically, many forms of street photography would be prohibited under this new rule. This also comes days after previous CEO Jack Dorsey quit, so that makes it more interesting whether he was for this, I don't know before, but maybe he was against this, and that's why another decision into him leaving could be completely unrelated, but who knows. This rule, you know, it'll be interesting what it's like, how strictly they're going to enforce it, but considering the amount of users that post media on Twitter and that kind of stuff, how they're going to enforce it is very, very, very interesting. Because if you think about it, say if you're a portrait photographer and you post a portrait of someone, are you going to get reported that for that? You know, technically, say I post that, one of my listeners could report that I didn't have the person's permission, then I have to prove that I had their permission with, like, I don't know, model release or some sort of stuff. It's going to be a long, tiring process. Whether they try and build an AI that can detect this, which they technically can't even do that, because yeah, it's from the sounds of what they said, it's based on a reporting system. You know, someone reports it, then they sort of do it. It's very messy. I don't see how it's going to work. It does sound like it's something that they can pick and choose. You know, a politician gets caught doing something they don't want, then, you know, Twitter can remove it, sort of thing. That's how it sounds to me. More like it's not to protect your average citizen, it's protect certain things. In terms of street photography, you know, street photography is all about photographing strangers, you know, doing their everyday life, sort of thing. So that's obviously a big target. It'll be interesting how it affects Twitter, you know, and how it affects photographers on Twitter. If they're posting photos that of strangers and then they get picked on for that, you know, their photos get removed, that kind of thing. Because one thing you have to keep in mind, you can take a photo of a couple, you know, just walking down the street, holding hands, happy, that kind of thing. But fact is, you don't know. Unless you know them, you know, when it's not really street, then if it's posed. But if it's just a random candid photo of people you don't know, strangers, for all you know, they're not even meant to be together. There could be that each person's husband or wife or whatever significant other is at home thinking they're at work when they're out together. You know, like you never know. So you publish that thinking it's just a nice, sweet couple walking down the street. Turns out they're cheating, and then they make, you know, the significant other sees it, they, you know, catches heat with the husband or wife or whatever over doing that. Then they make a complaint, your photo gets taken down, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's so many endless possibilities of what this could mean, especially for street photography. Whether or not how strictly it will be enforced, how it works, who knows? Twitter has made a lot of positive changes in terms of photography-wise, you know, increasing the image sizes, increasing how the platform looks, making it, removing those crops. They've made so many positive changes. So hopefully this is focused more on harassment, revenge porn, you know, anything that's negative, not just someone taking portraits, someone doing street photography, anything innocent in nature. Hopefully that stays innocent and stays on the platform. And this is purely just targeting, you know, the bad people out there doing bad things with photos. Creeps with a camera, pretty much. That's pretty much it for the news. So now we're on to the main topic. Now, flash photography isn't something any or every single photographer does, but it's something I dare to say almost everyone experiments with in some point of time in their photographic journey. You can be really creative with flash or any kind of off-camera lighting. You can get some really interesting abstract results and can even help you a lot, especially if you're in an area that, you know, lighting isn't the greatest and you can create your own light with it. So it opens up a lot of opportunities and opens up a lot of creative doors for you as well. Not to mention, it also gives you something new to learn and a lot to learn. You know, you think you may know everything about photography, then all of a sudden you get into flash, there's a lot more to learn. Got people like, you know, the Strobus, as mentioned before, he's done big tutorials, lots of stuff on how to use off-camera lighting. If you look anywhere through YouTube as well, you see so much tutorials and everything on lighting. So there's a lot of resources out there to learn, so it's not like it's impossible or even really that hard, to be honest. And there's also a lot of products out there that you can get to help you, you know, learn photo lighting and everything. I thought it'd be good to just do a bit of a look over what some good stuff to buy with your money would be. You know, I thought I'd go from very easy and cheap to higher up. I do mention some brands, but I wouldn't specifically say which ones you should go for, because it really comes down to your budget and how long you want to use it, what you want to use it for. Keep in mind, if you don't trash the gear and keep it, you know, under good condition, you can sell it again later on. I did that with my flashes, and that's what helped me buy some other gear once I sold them, because I didn't want the speed lights anymore once I got my strobe. Even when it comes to strobe, there's so many different price values. So yeah, that's why I didn't really make any exact product recommendations, just what I'm using. So what I'll say is the first one you could look at, you know, assuming you already have a light, I mean, technically you don't even need a light for the first one, but a reflector. So with a reflector, that's pretty much just shaping natural light and what you have. So say you're doing product photography in your house near a window. If you have the light coming in through the window, you could use a reflector on the opposite side to fill in some shadows. You know, if you're out doing portraits, you can use it to fill shadows as well. You don't technically need some off-camera lighting, a flash, to be able to make use of a reflector. They work for pretty much everything. If you do have something, speed light, strobe, anything, a softbox or an umbrella, or sometimes you can get the sort of mixture of both, beauty dishes, that kind of stuff. All these kind of modifiers are definitely something you should own if you have some kind of lighting. The lights by themselves can, you know, bare lights can be quite harsh, and, you know, they don't shape the light as well or soften the light. So because of that, you should always get some kind of diffuser. What type you like, what result you like, really depends on what type of photography you're doing. If you're doing portraits or something, maybe you prefer something like a beauty dish. For even then, you know, a lot of portrait photographers use softboxes or umbrellas. Really comes down to what effect you're doing, what you feel most comfortable with, and what you can work the best. One other thing you can get, you know, if you have a light, is colored gels. So although RGB light sticks and, you know, RGB lights are becoming more and more popular now, gels are also another option. So you can pretty much just put them over your speed light or your strobe or something, and it pretty much, when you use it, it'll give you that color. So you want to use red and blue backgrounds, you can do it that way. Pretty much your creativity is the limit in that sense, with so many options you can have out there to what to choose and what to get. In terms of actual lights, usually speed lights are what most beginners and most, you know, people who are new to photography and just want to experiment would go for. Although I don't believe they're the best, I do believe that if you're looking to experiment, you don't know how much you're going to use it and you don't want to spend too much, speed lights could probably be the best for you, mainly if you go for someone like Yongnuo or Godox. So with those two, they're, I believe, both Chinese. very more budget orientated ones, but the quality of them are very good. The build quality may not be something that will last as long as, say, like a Canon or Nikon or Sony Flash, but in terms of pure performance, they'll honestly match them just as much. Like, I regret when I first started photography, I bought a Canon EX 430 Mark II, Mark III, something like that. That was like $400. For that price, I could have bought several, like two, three, maybe even four Yongnuo lights of the same quality as well. Sometimes even better for that price. I think the Yongnuo I had that was really good was Yongnuo 685 or 586. That one was really powerful. It was really great speed light, great quality, great build. But if you're just looking to experiment or you purely want to do on-camera flash, so say you're like an event shooter, you walk around nightclubs, birthday parties, that kind of stuff, just walking around doing those kind of photos, then a speed light is probably going to be what you would want more, because it can be, maybe depending on how you set it up, not as convenient or not as practical to use a strobe. You can use, you know, buy multiple of these, do portraits, even if you get one powerful enough to do outdoor work, like you get one with high-speed sync especially, is another option. Depending on which one you get, may not be powerful enough to overpower the sun in that. You can only do it very low light or at nighttime, but really comes down to, you know, how much you're willing to experiment, what your shooting conditions are, what you're using them for, that kind of stuff. But speed lights are definitely something I'd say you could look into, but there's better areas to spend your money, which I'll get into in the strobe part. Now, I don't see these recommended as much, but I do think they are good. Now, light sticks or constant lights, main reason I would especially recommend them for them for someone who's more of a beginner is with, say, something like a light stick. So I got the Yongnuo YN360 Mark III, I think it is. When you use that, you can actually see where the light is. You know instantly what the light you're going to get. With a speed light or a strobe, you know, assuming you're not using a model light on a strobe, but with a speed light, for example, you don't know what it's going to look like till after you took the photo. Whereas with a constant light or a light stick, you'll see exactly right away, instantly. So you can just move it around, get it exactly how as you like. Once you find it exactly how you like, then you're set. It's very easy like that. Especially, you know, a lot of light sticks now are RGB, like my one is an RGB light stick. So in that regard, if you want to mess around with colored lights, instead of using gels, you can get these light sticks. And they're not expensive. The Yongnuo one I own, I think is about 150 to 180 brand new off Amazon Australia. So probably even cheaper in the US than that or other markets. So it's definitely something worth looking into, especially if you want to do RGB lighting for portraits or your product work. You know, if you get, say, three of those, that would pretty much be the same price as like a high-end Canon speed light. You could have your two gels on the background, two lights on the background doing your, you know, RGB colors, and have one on the model, purely lighting them, take your shot, done. When it comes to their main issues, I'd say, especially if you're using the normal colored lights, not so much color, but your normal temperature lights, with a speed light or mainly for a light stick, they can be harder to diffuse. So with my light stick, I bought a softbox that Yongnuo make for it, but it's not very good. It doesn't really fit it properly, so it's a bit useless. Whereas if you have an actual constant light that you can buy from Godox and all the Yongnuo, that kind of stuff, those are a lot more powerful, and you can, you know, assuming it comes in something like a Bowens mount and that, you can get your own diffuser for it, which would help a lot. Pretty much you just want to find some way to diffuse it or work with it in a way so it's not too harsh and you're not getting too many strong reflections or strong highlights on your subject, whatever you're using to light with. Now this one is probably, these two go together, so strobes and triggers. So I'll do strobes first. So this one is probably the best terms and quality of what you will get light output. If you don't shoot on camera lighting, so you know you shoot off camera, which technically for most stuff you probably shoot any product, proper portraits, that kind of stuff, you'll always get the best quality from a strobe. And strobes do, you know, just the name, it sounds expensive, sounds more difficult, but they're not. So if you look at something like the Godox 8200, that thing is like just a bit bigger than a speed light, not too much bigger, but it's much more versatile. So you have both a bare bulb, like a normal light bulb head on it, and as well as you got the speed light head, which you can interchange. If you look at that compared to something like, say, the Canon EX remote trigger Mark II. Now here in Australia, that flash, like the Canon one, costs $711 and you still have to add a trigger on it. Whereas with this 8200, which is a, you know, speed light strobe, same power, I believe, they both have a guide number of 60, which means they can go up to 60 meters at ISO 100. That one is only 450. Then if you look at the trigger with Godox trigger as well, that one's 105. So pretty decent. You're looking at just over, you know, 550 for the whole set. Whereas with Canon, 711 just for the flash itself. I personally really love my Godox 8200. You know, the price to performance is absolutely amazing with it. Because of how big the unit is, you know, it's not huge, but using that with any kind of diffuser, like say for a massive umbrella or a softbox, you just get such soft light and it looks really good. I find it actually easier to use sometimes rather than the speed lights as well, in a sense. Even though you don't know what your exposure is going to be, it's not hard to figure it out. And once you do figure it out, you'll find the light quality is so much softer and so much nicer. I haven't used mine outdoors that much because, you know, obviously I don't do portraits, so that's where the main use for it would be. But the one time I did sort of try and experiment with it, convinced my girlfriend to let me try, it worked really well outdoors and didn't have any issues with it. The main thing I'd say is, you know, any kind of speed light or strobe you use outdoors, you technically want someone to help hold it, because it's really a struggle, especially if it's windy, holding that in place and taking the photo as well, because any kind of speed light or, softbox or umbrella tends to pick up the wind quite a bit, especially an umbrella. Yeah, if you're shooting off camera, majority of the time, barely need it, this is the way to go, I would say. If you do need something for occasional on camera, just get a really cheap Yongnuo or Godox speed light and just use those along with the strobe. That would be probably the best way. And then obviously you need a trigger, as I mentioned. The reason why I like, say, Godox these days as well, is you can get the ones light and then use it with multiple brands. So what I did is, you know, back when I was shooting on Sony, I also have my Canon EFM gear. So what I did was I bought the 8200 and I had an X-Pro S, which is for Sony, and X-Pro C trigger. So it doesn't matter, you know, about the brand, just put that trigger on the Canon, put that trigger on the Sony, and boom, they can both use the same lighting if need be, which worked really well. And when I sold the Sony, I just sold off that trigger. It's pretty much a very, very easy transition. If you're only shooting one brand and then you decide to change later on, if you have, you know, the Godox, you can use it with any other kind of brand trigger. Depending on which, you know, item or flash you have, depending on which trigger you get, I use the X-Pro ones. I think they actually work with the speed lights as well as the strobes, but that was the main one I could see that did everything I needed to do, and that's the one I went with. As I mentioned, it was cheap, around $100. Yongnuo have a whole bunch of triggers as well. From what I remember though, the triggers were camera specific and so were the flashes, because, you know, obviously if you're going to be using them on camera, they need to be brand specific. I can't say for certain, I can't remember if they would work on another brand, you know, on top of camera. I don't remember trying it. I think it did, depending on Yongnuo and the pins and all that, but not like a 100% set thing. It really is dependent on just giving it a try, you know, fail or miss, hit or miss kind of thing. But those are pretty much the main things I would recommend looking into if you're into flash. It's not like a set rule about anything. Really comes down to how much you use it, what you want to use it for, and how much you expect to get out of it, how much you can spend on it. So hopefully that helps someone that's looking and getting. If you have any further questions, do let me know. If you'd want to listen to more episodes of this podcast, you can find it at thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you want to find me personally, I'm at photosbydlee.com and photosbydlee on Twitter. Also mainly use Flickr as well. Don't use Instagram, don't use Facebook. So yeah. Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode. Make sure to subscribe, leave a rating. Let me know if you want to have a suggestion for a topic you think I could cover well. Be really happy to look into that. So yeah, thank you very much for listening. See ya.